Good morning, 7:39, News Radio Pensacola. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. It's a Tuesday, and that means we have Sheriff Chip Simmons here in house with us. Sheriff, welcome back to the show, sir.
Good morning, Andrew. How are you?
I'm doing great. Always good to have you. Memorial Day weekend, everything going okay, especially out on the beach? As you know, people always ask questions, how did the beach event go? And in years past, there was, you know, some drama over things not being cleaned up, but in the most recent years, things have been all fairly well organized, well run, low level of incidents, and clean up pretty quickly. I mean, nobody likes it to be a mess while they're here, but nobody likes it for the Blue Angels to be a mess while they're here either, and that happens,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, if you see our beach after 4th of July, it's probably probably a little bit
exactly
in disarray as well. But no, I have not received a single call about an incident that took place. I would imagine that we would probably, with all the people there, I would imagine we'd probably have some, you know, some disturbances here and there and some assistance we have to provide people, but by all accounts, it went real well.
Do you typically, for that staff, like, is that extra duty? They basically hire security, that's your agency?
The Island Authority allocates a certain amount of overtime.
Okay.
So we increase it whenever we think there's going to be a big event. Now, we did, I did allocate some overtime for some events that could potentially have taken place in Escambia County, in the not on the island.
Oh, okay.
So we did have some expense regarding the holiday, but we do that a lot whenever we think there might be some parties here and there, and we want to make sure that we
have. So this is you staffing up, not them hiring off-duty officers.
Right. Well, no, they did hire some off-duty officers,
okay,
but that's not something that would come out of our budget, so they would have some deputies out there.
Gotcha.
But it went pretty smooth.
We had a couple of incidents in the last week. One was, I guess, over the weekend. You had the way I heard the story was that a DJ at Town and Country Sunday morning, that he got shot or shot at, and like multiple times. Not being cooperative, though, is what I also kind of heard you guys saying on Channel 3, I think.
Yeah, we are, as reported, he was working as a DJ and ended up getting shot by someone he doesn't know anything about, and that's where we're at.
I'm sorry. I just know you too well that, you know, the way you describe a story. Go on. So as the tale's being told to us, totally random person came up and shot him, and you don't know nothing about it, never seen these people, and can't figure out any reason why it would happen. Is that what I hear you saying?
Oh, as I understand, I believe he also had warrants on him, so we also charged him, and then he was being booked while he was at the hospital.
Okay. All right. Some mysteries are less mysterious than others, I guess, is maybe one way to say that. So you also had two drug houses got torn down. Is that right?
Yeah, you know, we've made a
concerted... Or at least closed down. I don't know if
torn down. We don't tear down houses. We just help.
Not yet.
Not yet. No, the Board of County Commissioners Code Enforcement does a really good job of doing that for us and for everyone else. Our narcotics unit has really been doing a good job of you know, stepping things up a little bit. I've added more people to the unit. So they're doing a really good job. If you can see some of the pictures and some of the drug dealers that we're getting off the streets, I think in the recent past, number 23 and 24, we started to number them so people understand just how effective our narcotics unit is being. Do we think that we're going to stop it all? No, but we certainly going to try. And this is an indication of what we're seeing. If you can see, I'm looking at one of the pictures now on our Facebook page, always guns and drugs and money. And it just, that's the way people end up getting shot. That's the way people end up, you know, overdosing and that sort of thing. So we're glad, and we put their picture out there so people understand who is poisoning our community, who is not doing their fair share in our community.
What's the drug, or maybe there's not just one, but, you know, these things change over time. You know, you've often talked about when you were back in the undercover and working narcotics and, you know, what it was back then. And, you know, what is the trouble drug right now? Is it, you know, you tell me, is it meth? Is it, you know,
I say we see more fentanyl? Meth. Fentanyl is our number one priority. That's the drug that's killing people.
But it's fentanyl on its own, or fentanyl that gets mixed in typically with other things?
Well, we've been seizing fentanyl pills recently. So they're either mixing them or taking them on their own. But I would say that we seem to be finding a lot. It's weird because in the past, as you mentioned, it was always you do marijuana, you do this, cocaine. Mm-hmm. But we've seen some crack cocaine come back. People are getting their cooking crack. The last I guess, a couple of weeks, we've made two or three cases where there's actually crack cocaine again. So now we have all of the bad stuff. We have the new bad stuff was the fentanyl. We have meth that they used to cook in the kitchens. Now they get it so cheap from Mexico that they don't have to do that anymore.
Yeah, that's by the way, just to pause you on that, like, this is something that we've mentioned before, but people may not realize is the reason you don't hear about people cooking meth in their cars or houses blown up because they're meth labs is because it's just more cost effective to get it imported from Mexico because they make it industrially in these massive operations and they sneak it across the border.
By the hundreds of kilos and thousands of kilos that are just coming in from Mexico and it ends up in our community, ends up in pretty much every community. But yeah, we have the mixture of the fentanyl and then we have the meth and then we have the high quality marijuana. We've seen some pills recently. If you've noticed like some of the pictures, we've got some oxys, we got some Xanax, we got different pills. A lot of party drugs, but also just the stuff like the fentanyl. That's the mixture.
Is heroin much of a problem for us in Escambia County?
We've arrested people with heroin, but it's not really something that I would be surprised to see heroin on the list of the drugs that we end up seizing on a search warrant.
But I assume that typically when people are involved in this illegal endeavor, they're kind of involved in all of it. You know, the people who deal a lot are not like specialists.
They seem to be willing to do just about anything. Yeah. If you can see the pictures of the people that we arrest.
Is there, these are more kind of general questions, but I'm just kind of, you know, you and I don't often talk about this exactly, but, you know, criminal endeavors, you tend to have this picture like if somebody's in crime, they're doing all the crime, you know, like there's a lot of interaction between them. Is there much overlap between, for example, the drug dealers and like trafficking and prostitution, or are they kind of separate endeavors in our community? You know, theft rings, breaking into cars, stealing guns and stuff like that. Are these all interconnected here in Escambia County, or do they tend to be kind of separable by their category?
I think that the way I'd have to answer that is if you look at an enterprise like the car burglaries. You know, if we go in there, we catch a group of people that are doing a lot of car burglars. That's their enterprise.
Yeah.
We don't always find a lot of drugs with them. Now, we find a little bit of drugs almost always.
Okay.
So they're involved in the drugs, but not really the drug trafficking that we have noticed.
Got it.
And the drug traffickers, they're not, because they make enough money on the drug trafficking, they don't have to also be, you know, safe burglars or something like that. So while it wouldn't surprise me to see that connection, we don't always see.
And same for like, you know, human trafficking, prostitution, that's kind of a separate thing
we very rarely see the trafficking in drugs. Or the car burglaries and such, or property crimes associated with the people that are doing the human trafficking part.
Okay. Well, that's up for me anyway, for having kind of a picture of what reality is. We had a horrible story in the last week, and you know, I hate talking about kids, but this is the kind of thing that, because it might prevent and save a life, I do want to talk about it for a second. We had a young child, an infant, drown in a bathtub.
Right.
With the parent present, but not doing their job.
Yeah, again, how tragic is this? We had a one-year-old that, according to reports, he put the child in a bathtub and let the water run or trickle. And then he went to another room and fell asleep because of some Benadryl or some medication he had taken earlier. Mm-hmm. And when he was awakened by another young child that was there, left unattended, he woke up to find the child unresponsive in a bathtub. In fact, we rarely charge someone for drownings because they're accidental and they happen, even though the parenting was reconsidered reasonable.
Even when people are active, especially around pools and things, it can happen very quickly.
Right. And there are people that should be supervising. But in this case, it was a different level. It was, you know, we didn't feel like it was reasonable, practical, or adequate, obviously. Mm-hmm. In our situation, in our thought process, is that you should have known a one-year-old can't be left unattended in a tub. You should have known you can't take a drug like Benadryl that clearly always says it could cause drowsiness. You should have known you shouldn't have left the child in a separate room from you. You should have known not to lay on the bed and all these sort of things. And to me, and to us, our investigators as well, it wasn't reasonable. Mm-hmm. Now they'll have their day in court and they can handle it that way. But for us, as you said, we want people to understand that when we investigate these things, we look at the reasonableness and we talk about that with gun ownership. We talk about that with a number of things, and we don't always arrest, but there are times when we feel like things it certainly didn't have to happen.
Right.
And so the charges were brought about.
Horrible story. And, you know, I never like talking about kids getting hurt or getting killed, but it's, again, a learning opportunity for everybody to pay more attention, you know, sort of to realize the things that are going on. There was a story out of L.A., and we wouldn't normally care much, but it made me want to ask you a question.
About L.A. or the story?
either one. Yeah. Los Angeles, by the way, not Lower Alabama. But out of Los Angeles, where this actor interrupted somebody stealing his catalytic converter and winds up getting murdered over it.
I saw that, yeah. And the accounts that I heard was, he really didn't even try to physically stop him. He just yelled at him, "Hey, get away from under my car! You're, you know." And then the guy just gets up and shoots him. These catalytic converters, if you recall, about a year or so ago, maybe 2 years ago, we had a rash of them.
Yeah,
here locally.
They seemed to
you
be all the time.
You couldn't park a motorhome beside a car, a roadway. We made a number of arrests. We had our property investigators were on it. We did a lot of we had some cars stays on the side of the road.
Yep.
And you know, to
bait someone, converters.
Yes. Bait.
Betalytic converters.
Betalytic, yeah. Sometimes I think you need help.
I got Jimmy. You saying Jimmy's not adequate? Oh, that's not what you meant. All right. Fair enough.
No, yes. So we had a lot of effort into arresting people that were involved in a catalytic converter theft. Now, I'm not saying they don't happen. We still get reports of them, but we don't have as many of them here as we did a couple years ago. Now, these things run in cycles, as
right,
you know,
right.
And if someone's going to come in town that has an expertise in cutting these things off, they may try to do it again. But it's just, how tragic is that over in L.A.? There's a reason I don't live over there.
And one last quick thing before we let you go. My boys like to go to the range. Mm-hmm. Okay, for birthdays and stuff, for fun. And we went to the range the other day, and it had been a little while since I had gone. And it reminded me of, if you don't train routinely,
right,
you're not skilled. And in a moment where you need, especially if you're a concealed carry, as I am, it's the first shot that counts the most. And if your first time practicing on the target makes you feel like, oh, I should be better at this, you should be better at this, right? And I felt that way. And I felt, okay, this is a good reminder. But can you talk about that for a second, about how important it is for training for your officers, but training for, you know, ordinary citizens? And, I mean, I felt bad that I wasn't better first shot. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, there's a fine line there. There's how good do you want to be? I mean, do you want to be
adequate,
you know, competition safe type of a shooter, or do you want to be able to protect yourself and your family or others?
Or the people in the
grocery
store or whatever,
right? And I think
what
you just said is a good point, because we try to encourage people to be, A, familiar with the weapon that you choose, mm-hmm. because we had another accidental shooting, by the way, over the weekend.
Oh, okay.
That I forgot to mention earlier. But and then B, you
accidental
you need
for real or accidental?
No,
they're saying
really. They reported, "Hey, I shot myself."
Okay,
you know,
all right.
I was trying to do this and that, but so you can be familiar. You need to be familiar with the weapon itself, and then you need to be a little bit proficient, so that when you know where to point, because you can't always bring the firearm up to the eye and, you know, doing that sort of thing. A lot of times
things
you have
happen
to point
pretty
and
quickly,
shoot.
Right?
Right, and so I would also suggest that if you get an opportunity to go to the range, and I hope you do, that you do practice drawing from a concealed area, you know, without shooting yourself, hopefully, so that you can put a couple of rounds. We train, you know, most of the shootings in law enforcement are just within a short, a close distance. Very few shootings take place 10 yards out, mm-hmm. you know, 30 feet or 50 feet out. They're all within close quarters.
It's like 5 to 10 feet,
yeah,
typically,
yeah.
Right?
Or certainly within 5 yards.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that, and that's what we end up training ourselves, you know, in that draw quickly and shoot quickly. Just point to shoot type of thing, and don't sit there and train a weapon and take your time doing it. You've got to, in some cases, shoot to protect yourself and to stop a threat. And so I would suggest that people that go to the range, that when you do that, you train unholstering your weapon first safely. Don't do it the first time with a real round in your gun, but do that very, you know, in a safe environment, and then continue to practice and get as good or proficient as you feel like you need to be.
And I mean, a lot of ranges don't want you to draw and shoot. You know, they prefer you not to, so you may have to find a place where you can do that. But also, I mean, again, like you say, okay, so stress makes everything worse.
Right.
And if you carry conceal, you're trying to navigate your shirt tail, you know, and which hand, and did you grab it? Is your finger off the trigger? Did you pull it and shoot yourself in the leg because your finger's on the trigger? Are you stressed and freaked out? Like, all of those things that you guys know to practice, because you have to practice for real, but a lot of people don't think about it, and then they find themselves in a situation, oh, this didn't go as well as it needed to.
you know, we talk about responsibility. Be responsible when you do these sorts of things. We don't want accidental shootings. We certainly don't want you in your car practicing, you know, that sort of thing. But we do encourage people to be familiar and with the weapon, familiar with how to draw the weapon, and familiar with how to shoot the weapon.
And I'll just say this because I notice it myself, is typical shooting practice, two-hand Weaver stance, you're all good. But if you're drawing and having to deal with a problem, you know, that's sudden, you may wind up needing to shoot with one hand. You may want to practice that.
Yeah, and like you said, though, where do you practice and how safe of an environment do you practice that with? Again, take those moments to make sure the weapon's unloaded. Take those opportunities to make sure that you're aware of the field of fire.
Right.
And if you do those two things, then you know, you're unlikely to be harmed.
Your chances are a lot better, and that's the point. That's why training matters so much. Chief, Chief.
You're dating me.
I've
been a chief for 8 years.
You find that offensive that I'd call
No,
you?
I don't find that offensive, but I do not.
Sheriff Chip Simmons.
I've been called worse.
Fair enough. Not by me. Sheriff Chip Simmons, great to have you, sir. Thanks for the time, for keeping us safe and keeping us informed. I appreciate it.
You bet. Y'all take care.